This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with advocate and activist Leroy Moore. But first, disability news for the week of August 29th, 2022. As many in the disability community already know, children and adults with disabilities unnecessarily wait months for dental care. But it's possible that bureaucratic issues could be fixed. Three dental groups, the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry, the American Dental Association, and the American Association of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgeons, are advocating to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, citing significant concerns about access to dental procedures. Specifically, they said that issues with billing coding that hospitals use for dental patients who require operating room access, Medicare provides a rate far short of the average cost for services. As a result, the dental groups contend that hospitals are reluctant to schedule their surgical cases. Meanwhile, current Medicare regulations do not allow for coverage of dental surgeries at ambulatory surgical centers, which professionals say could help ease pressures from the lack of access to hospital operating rooms. Dental professionals say the impact is extensive, since both Medicaid and commercial insurance derives their rates and coverages based upon the policies of Medicare. Under a new proposal, CMS plans to update the Medicare code that hospitals use to bill for dental procedures in operating rooms, allowing for more coverage. Dr. Jane Grover, Senior Director of the Council on Advocacy for Access and Prevention at the American Dental Association, said that if approved, the CMS proposal, quote, would take a significant first step forward toward improving access to needed dental surgeries for children and adults with disabilities, end quote. In addition, Grover indicated that the dental community is continuing to advocate for reforms that would help to ensure there is sufficient operating room capacity to support dental surgical access for disabled patients served by Medicare and Medicaid. The proposed rule is up for public comment through September 13th. If finalized, the changes would take effect on January 1. In 2019, 10 parents of children with disabilities filed a lawsuit against the New Jersey Department of Education for taking too long to address special education disputes. Now a federal district judge has ruled that the case may become a class action suit, including an estimated 15,000 families whose children may have been harmed by administrative delays. In his ruling this month, U.S. District Judge Noel Hillman allowed two groups of parents to proceed in class action suits, one group asking for the State Department of Education to fix its dispute resolution system for current and future students, and the other group seeking justice for students during the past few years during the pandemic who were kept waiting too long. According to a recent report, the average time for cases to be resolved was more than 200 days as of 2018. More recently, lawyers said that has increased to an average of 9 months, with about 1,000 families requesting hearings each year. Under the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, special ed disputes must be resolved in 45 days, but the U.S. Department of Education said that in 2016-17 school year, less than 5% of due process complaints were resolved on time in the state of New Jersey. Several advocacy organizations have joined in the suit as well. And in an earlier ruling that the case should proceed, the judge noted that the parents had made plausible claims that the system is, quote, profoundly broken and routinely violates the federal laws designed to ensure that our most vulnerable children remain the priority we should all agree they are, end quote. And finally, money follows the person, an important Medicaid program that helps people with disabilities move from institutions to community-based living, will become available in Illinois, Kansas, New Hampshire, American Samoa, and Puerto Rico. The program also provides extra funds for employment, housing, and other services to help people transition from nursing homes and other institutions to homes in the community. With the latest awards totaling about $25 million, CMS said there will now be Money Follows the Person programs in 41 states and territories. Money Follows the Person officially expired in 2016, and rather than renewing it, Congress approved 8 short-term extensions. Without a federal commitment, many states closed their programs as they ran out of money. That led to a significant decline in the number of people transitioning out of institutions, according to the CMS report. Eventually, the program was renewed in late 2020 for 3 years and is now poised to grow again. According to Chiquita Brooks-LeSure, administrator of CMS, quote, "We are putting the full weight of this agency behind solutions that can meet people where they are and help to get them where they want to be when it comes to health care. Money Follows the Person has a proven track record of helping seniors and people with disabilities transition safely from institutional care to their own homes and communities," end quote. And that's the news for this week. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by Leroy Moore, who was on the show a number of years ago, but has done so much since. Leroy started an effort called Crip Hop Nation, and since then has been a busy, busy man. Welcome to the program, Leroy.
Hello, Vicki. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Man, I don't even know where to start with you. Why don't you start just by introducing yourself to the listeners?
Hello, this is Leroy Moore from L.A., California. I was born with a disability back in 1967. I am now at UCLA getting my PhD. And still doing Crip Hop Nation.
Are you really? It's still going. I think I read on Facebook that you now have a Crip Hop organization in Europe somewhere, don't you?
Oh, we got chapters all over. We got chapters in Europe, Africa, Canada, Brazil. So yeah, it's international.
Okay. Well, why don't you take a minute to explain to the listeners what Crip Hop Nation is all about?
So Crip Hop Nation is an international coalition of musicians, artists, activists with disabilities. It started almost 15 years ago with myself, Keith Jones, and the late Rob Denoy Temple. And we do music, of course, but we do a lot more than just music. We do activism. We do articles. We have visual artists. And you know, the big thing that we're doing this year is that Crip Hop Nation is under an LLC of Keith Jones, and Keith Jones is the co-founder. And that LLC with Crip Hop is doing what's called the channel. So we're making our own channel that's going to stream movies and music videos all done by people with disabilities. So that's one of the big things that we're doing this year. And one of the huge things that we're going to try to plan for before the Olympics the pandemic come to L.A., that we're going to try to open up the Quip Hop Institute. So it's going to be a building in L.A. where we take over a building, and it's going to have a whole, like, 4 or 5 floors.
Mm-hmm.
So the first floor will be a visual art studio. The second floor will be the music studio. The third floor will be an international floor where there's going to be computer screens on the walls where each chapter can talk to each other. And the last floor is going to be just the floor for myself to live in. So, so that's the Quip Hop Institute.
So would you describe Crip Hop as strictly a venue for artists who are who have disabilities, or is it more than that? Is it about advocacy as well?
Yeah, it's more than that. It's about activism, education. You know, we're going to have a huge library, so we're going to I've been selecting books and magazines on people with disabilities for years and years. So we're going to have a huge library. It's a visual art. We've been paying disabled artists to do pieces for Crip Hop.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing this for 5 years. We have about 12 pieces from all over, from different parts of Africa, Brazil, the U.S. So, yeah, Crip Hop is a lot more than just music.
How are you getting all these people engaged from international, you know, places? It's amazing. How many people do you have involved right now?
I think Crip Hop is like 1,000 members so far.
Mm-hmm.
Crip Hop started on MySpace back in the day, before Facebook, before Twitter. And now it's just, you know, people are just contacting us through our social network, you know, things. And, you know, people see us in newspapers, so they call us. You know, I just got off the phone with this painter in New York that saw our spot on Facebook about visual art. So I just talked to him, and he's going to do a piece for us. So, you know, that's how artists, you know, get with us.
Yeah, you've been doing this for 15 years now, you said. So ultimately, what's the big goal that you have in mind for keeping this going and growing Crip Hop Nation?
Yeah, so the big goal is the Crip Hop Institute, where we're going to have a physical place, you know, that institute is only one. We want to grow it to have different Crip Hop Institutes in different countries. We've been talking to our Crip Hop chapter in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying to buy a piece of land and have the Crip Hop Institute there. So one big goal is to institutionalize. Well, we're going to have an organization, a physical organization, not my little apartment, but have a physical space where, you know, people with disabilities can come and do music, do art, research. So it's almost like the Ed Roberts Building in Berkeley. This is going to be more arts-driven and more international-driven.
Yeah, sounds so awesome. And that you expect to have that done by the time you said that the Olympics open up in L.A., which is when?
Yeah. So the Olympics will be here in 2028.
Mm-hmm.
So because, you know, Quip just won an Emmy for our music of the Netflix show Rising Rising Phoenix.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
Yeah, it was a film about the Paralympics. So it's interesting, Keith, because it's a full circle, because I used to be in the Paralympics back in 88.
Mm-hmm.
So now last year, we wrote the theme song for the Netflix film Rising Phoenix for the Paralympics film.
Mm-hmm.
So we won a grant, an Emmy for that. It's the second biggest sporting song in the world.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So if people, you know, before we move on to, I want to talk a little bit about you going back to school to get your PhD, but is there a place where people can go to learn more about CRIPHUP? Do you have a website?
Yeah, we have the website. We're still working on it, but it's out. It's on CRIPHUPNation.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, that should be easy to remember, CRIPHUPNation.com, and they can probably link to your Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff from there.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So let's talk a little bit about your PhD program. What, I mean, everything that you're doing that keeps you so busy with all this, you know, artistry stuff and your advocacy and all that stuff, how do you find time to go back to school to get a PhD? And what's it going to be in? What's your goal?
Yeah, so it's kind of strange because they, UCLA reached out to me. I wasn't thinking about it. They reached out to me because they were writing a book that's going to come out this year around hip-hop. And my advisor now that my advisor assistant is a mother with a son with autism.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, oh, you got to reach out to me right more and you never have a CRIPHUP chapter. So we wrote the chapter together. Me and Stephanie Parks is about to come out this year. But, you know, writing a chapter, my advisor now, Aline, you know, said, Leroy, have you ever thought about doing a PhD? I was like, no, I'm just doing the work, not really. So he said the key word. He said, it could be a free ride.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, okay. So I applied at the GRE test, and here I am. My first quarter was last quarter, and got a 4.0 on my first quarter. This is first time being back in the class since 1995.
Yeah, so, you know, there's an advantage, I think, to be an older student. You have that life experience behind you that gives you the confidence to really, you know, knock it out of the park as you get a little bit older. So, yeah, congratulations. What is your major area of study then?
Oh, yeah, it is under anthropology, linguistic,
mm-hmm.
Linguistic
anthropology. Very yeah. Interesting. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's a study of language.
The history kind of thing about language and culture.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so it's kind of strange, Vicky, because this quarter I'm taking this language class, and I was looking at the syllabus, and the syllabus had everything except sign language. I was like, why are you guys on that sign language? So I'm doing my final project on Black Sign Language. So
great. Well, you know, I think that the university, UCLA, is certainly going to benefit by having you there. Probably more so than you will, learn from them. They will learn from you. So congratulations on that for sure. Did I read something on your Facebook page about you were going to be advising on a couple of films?
Yeah, that's another new area that just popped up last year. Is that I am a consultant on two films that's going to come out this year. One film is about a Blade runner that runs on Blade, and he's trying to get into the Olympics, but the Olympics are being jerks about it. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And another film that just landed in my email a couple weeks ago is about a case that happened a couple of years ago in the New York Times where this black disabled man fell in love with this teacher. And come to find out that the teacher was taking advantage of this man. So the teacher went to court. It was in the New York Times. The teacher went to court and got a couple of years in jail. So they're making a movie about that case. And they just hired me to be a consultant on the case. On the movie.
Yeah. Well, when it comes out, you'll have to, maybe be on the show again to talk about how it turned out and your work on that, because it sounds like you're just at the beginning stages of that, huh?
Yeah, it's the beginning stages of that. The Blade, Olympic runner, they're close to finishing that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two that I'm consulting in, but there's two that I'm going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And one is with this hip-hop journalist, author, Kevin Powell. Really, really good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing a movie about black men. So he wanted a couple of black disabled men in his documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming out soon. And another one that I just talked to the people a couple of days ago. It's still up in the air, but they really want to do it. It's a movie about adults with disabilities.
So more of a documentary, or is it a...
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that all sounds very interesting. What do you do in your spare time? Do you have any of that? Ask you, what are your focuses as far as your advocacy go these days? What are the issues that really are most meaningful to you in disability world?
Yeah, these days I'm really being very picky about my activism.
Mm-hmm.
Because of other things, school and grip hops and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm still in that activist around police brutality and people with disabilities. I've been an activist on that issue since 1984.
Mm-hmm.
So, still, writing articles. And matter of fact, in L.A., there was a case of a Latino youth that got really abused by the sheriff in L.A. They came to his house. Somebody called the police. They came to his house and really roughed him out. He's still alive, thank God. But because of community pressure, the DA dropped the charges against him because the police was trying to charge him, of the resisting arrest and all this BS. So because of the community came out and wrote letters, they dropped the charges.
Yeah, well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
So where do you get your inspiration? What is there a person that is like your hero that you've really looked up to that you like to model your work after, or are you kind of making this up as you go along?
It's kind of both. You know, when I was younger, you know, I think this is why I am doing Crip Hop today. When I was younger, I was in my parents' basement, and my father had this huge record collection. And that's when I saw a mirror of myself. I saw a lot of blind blues artists. You know, I saw Walter Jackson that walked with crutches, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw that, and I also saw the movie and the play, Porgy and Bess. So that totally changed my life. You know, Porgy and Bess is a black play, play around Porgy, and Porgy has a physical disability. So when I saw that in 1979, I was like, oh, wow, I'm Porgy. So, you know, those two incidents really, I think, shaped my future. I didn't know it then, but looking back on it, it's like, okay, now I understand why I do what I do.
Yeah, really drawn into the art of film and music and all that. That is your voice, apparently, huh? So,
thank you.
What's happening after you? Let's see, I imagine it'll be a couple of years before you get your PhD. What do you hope to do with that, or is that just you're in for UCLA and making change there?
Trying to make change here, you know, trying to get Black disability studies here. But you know what? My goal is outside of university. You know, my goal is to open up that Crip Hop Institute and, you know, have that, you know.
It'll be great.
Yeah, the community come and learn about, you know, disabled musicians and make some music. So yeah, so that's my goal. You know, and in the meantime, you know, more publicity and articles and chapters. Queer Pop is going to be in like 3 or 4 textbooks this year.
Great. That's amazing. And your success is very well deserved. You are my new hero, Leroy Moore. Thank you for joining me today. And I really appreciate the work you're doing. That website, again, is criphopnation.com.
Yeah.
Criphopnation.com. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, Vicky. Take care.
All right. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stay. Dragging me down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Food Sleuth Radio. So stay tuned for that and other great programming here on WEFT Community Radio all evening long, all week long, all month long. It's always an interesting journey to listen to WEFT. So we hope you enjoy it.